G'day folks, welcome to Pause and Listen, a podcast series brought to you by Big Dog Pet Foods, the leading pet nutrition provider in Australia with over 20 years of experience in the pet industry. We provide educational resources for pet parents and are proud of being transparent in everything we do. The podcast series is hosted by me, Johnny Manning, and we bring you interviews and deep dives into pet nutrition, pet care, training, and regular Ask a Vet segments. So thanks for tuning in. Now get your tails wagging and we'll get yapping. Welcome back to another episode of Pause and Listen. This is a Big Dog Pet Foods podcast. It's a place for you to come and find out all manner of pet-related information. Let's just get stuck into it.
Okay, I'm curious to hear your stance on this.
Yes.
Whether raw bones are dangerous.
Okay.
It's not a black and white one.
No, it's not. So, I'm an idiot. Everyone knows that I'm an idiot. So I'll tell you my stance on it. If you get the blessed raw bones, which is, say, if you got a, like a femur and you get it cut four ways, right?
Yeah.
Then it has the C shape.
Yes.
Which on the really moles of the teeth is dangerous. No good, right?
Plus all the marrow and stuff.
Yeah. So that is
dangerous.
Yeah. So that is, but if it's just a standard raw meaty bone, I'm all for it.
Good. They're nature's toothbrush.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, and so many minerals and vitamins. I think a lot of people forget how nutritious bones are.
I know, right?
You get a raw meaty bone and something like a chicken, probably a chicken wing or a chicken neck would be not far off a complete a balanced meal. Like it actually has many nutrients. It's amazing.
That's unreal.
Yeah. No, it's really cool. So I'm a big fan. So I'm a big fan of raw bones because they're good for the dental health. They're good as a nutrient source, but they're also really good for our pet's mental health. And I think that is just as good reason to feed them raw bones as anything else. We need our pets to be more independent and confident than they are. Separation anxiety has gone up over 700% in the last few years. 70% of pets experience stress and anxiety. We need to do more for their mental health. When they chew a bone, they release all the happy hormones. They're not relying on you to bring joy to their life. They can do something themselves. So they can release the dopamine, serotonin. They're doing it themselves. So when you walk out the door to work, they know how to bring some joy to their own life. They're not relying on you as their whole source of joy. So I think it's really good from that point of view as well. But I always say to pet owners that it is not black and white and it's absolutely your choice. It, like lots of things in life, it doesn't come without risk. You know, going for a walk's a risk.
Yeah.
So it's not, and I think a lot of vets say no to raw bones because they're worried about being sued.
Oh, okay.
Because I know in America, like, you know,
It's a
litigious society. So I think that I completely get it. But I'm passionate about educating how to do it safely because there's so many benefits.
Right.
So I think you got to stick to your golden rules. So non-weight-bearing bones, yeah, they're the safe ones. Non-weight-bearing. So if they can walk on them, bear weight on them, don't feed them, they're too hard. They will cause a slab fracture to that back molar. Dogs' jaws only go up and down. They're carnivores, we'll get onto that.
Yeah.
Ours go side to side.
Yeah.
Yeah. And herbivores, omnivores, ours go side to side. So if you were to chew on a bone, your top and bottom jaw can slip. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So theirs can only go up and down.
Yeah.
So you get this shearing fracture on those back molars when they chew those really hard bones. So we call it a slab fracture.
Yeah.
A really expensive tooth to pull out.
I'll bet.
Yeah. So if you go to your vet and they're like, yeah, have a raw bone, go and chew on that. And then the person comes back next week and goes, they broke their tooth and they're like, oh, we need to do a dental now. They're not going to be very happy, are they?
No.
So you really need to understand what's safe. So non-weight-bearing bones. So I'm talking necks, tails, ribs, things like that. For the little tiny guys, the little toy breeds, even chicken feet, duck feet.
Yep.
Little ears, things like that. Obviously, you've got to be careful where you're sourcing it from. The meatier, the better for me. So if you get a raw meaty bone, and that's like 50% meat, 50% bone, even better because you're you're like tearing at it, and then because you've got your front teeth, they're your tearing teeth. So you want to see them almost like flossing their teeth with it, because then that's going to clean those teeth, and then chewing it with the back teeth. So that's why, yeah, I love the raw meaty bones.
What about those sort of knuckly bones you get with meat around them?
No, because you still got that's still a weight bearing. Yeah, I mean, okay. Like I guess if you were just the knuckle bit, that's going to be a cartilage and a surface, but the bone behind that, their knees and elbows and yeah. Yeah, so they're still no good. So we need non-weight-bearing bones.
Yep.
So small dogs, because I get asked all the time, can you tell me what bone to give my dog? Small dogs, necks, so turkey necks, duck necks, whole chicken frames, and tail. I don't mind a bit of kangaroo tail. That's a good option.
Yep.
And then the big dogs, you're looking at briskets and things. Yeah, they're expensive. Right. Or big whole roo tails and stuff like that. So in an ideal world, I would have a dog chewing for 20 minutes every day.
Yeah.
So if you can afford that, fantastic. If not, just do what you can make work within your family. Some people who are really busy, they will – and you always want to supervise bone chewing. You don't go and leave this giant bone and go off to work. I'm not a fan of that. I find that a bit risky because I still want to be there to help.
Well, they say 20 minutes is just the max for their teeth as well,
You need to get 20 minutes to clean the teeth. So some pet parents will save it for the weekend and they'll just do a weekend bone. Yeah. And no one wants a bone being dragged through the house either. Like, that's not fun. Not as much as those shark fin things. Have you ever given... Those dehydrated, they're horrendous.
I've given seafood treats before. Oh, so bad. Like, here, have one of these, and you pull it open, you're like,
yeah, the skin, like wow. The dehydrated skin rolls, they're awful.
Yeah, right.
So, non-weight-bearing, and then what we were sort of alluding to earlier, don't feed them so infrequently that they become such a high-priced possession, because they're going to be your guzzlers.
Yeah.
And that stresses everyone out. That if you want a guaranteed way to never feed a dog a raw bone again... Have a near choking experience on a raw bone.
Okay, so are we going to bust that myth, or are we going to say that's a push?
Look, I think that you can say, so if the myth is that raw bones are dangerous, and I don't think it is.
Okay.
I don't think raw bones are dangerous. I just think you need education and understanding behind it, which I guess is like lots of things. It's just not a black and white one, so I don't know if you can.
So we'll call it dealer's choice.
Dealer's choice.
Poconite
at Mano.
So raw meaty bones are not necessarily dangerous, but it's dealer's choice.
Yes, you need to understand your dog and whether your dog's a good chewer and your appetite for a degree of risk.
All right, but cool.
When done well, they're amazing.
Amazing. Yeah. All right. What do we got next?
Are you letting me go again?
You know what? I told you I'd let you drive, so I'm just going to roll with it.
You're reformed.
Yeah, I am. Absolutely.
Well, we were talking about jaws.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the whole omnivore carnivore debate.
Sure.
So are dogs – I mean, look, cats are carnivores. We all know that. We know cats hunt. Yes. Interesting, and I don't know whether I'll lead with this or not, but interesting, they did a study on indoor kibble-fed cats, and they showed that they showed more predatory – prey like behavior than cats are indoor outdoor.
Wow. So you
deprive them of that
natural animals.
Yeah. So cats are carnivores, that's an easy one. Dogs are a bit trickier because they have different type of behavior, in that I think the way you could describe their natural instinct would be a scavenging nature. Mm. And so because they're scavengers and they're not necessarily true hunters like cats, they will eat various things depending on where they're living. So you find, I've read studies, some countries they'll eat up to 30% of their diet being fecal matter. You live, like it's gross. But they survive on anything. Whereas some places when if they're around farmers and they're being thrown bread all the time, well, they'll eat a lot of bread. If they're left to their own devices in a beautiful environment, they'll probably eat rats and mice and mammals and...
I don't mean to interrupt. Yeah. So carnivore is a description of what an animal would thrive on.
Yes, yeah. What they would choose.
There you go, what they would choose. So, if they're going to get fed a lot of bread, they're going to eat the bread.
Yeah.
But they're not going to thrive on that.
No, they're not going to thrive on it. And
put bread next to a big meat. Chunk of meat, they're going to go for the meat.
100%. So, absolutely. So if you give dogs a choice, they will absolutely, they'll choose like 97 to 98% meat-based diet, like 110%. And then again, what we were talking about, their jaw structure before, their jaws are designed to eat meat. They're a carnivorous jaw. It goes up and down. That's how you eat meat. So they're absolutely designed to eat meat. We can go into the detail around whether they've evolved to eat carbohydrates. I think that's another one we're coming to. But they can eat lots of different diets, but as you said, they thrive on a high meat diet. Not even just a 50-50 sort of diet. They're not like humans where we can do all different variations. They really do thrive on a meat-based diet. So I have no doubt in my mind they're carnivores. I like the term scavenging carnivore. There are all sorts of different phrases, but I think that kind of sums them up. But I think for a lot of people, they like to call them omnivores because it kind of makes you feel better that most of the food that a lot of people give them is just so not protein based.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whenever they catch a great white shark, they might find a car number plate in its stomach. Doesn't mean it's not going to just eat that. It's fish and meat that it's going to eat. So
well, exactly. And you if you looked at cows, and we know what they eat, but they're going to swallow some insects when they're eating the grass. Doesn't mean their diet's insects. Exactly. You know, like we get so caught up in that fine little bit of detail and just jump on it sometimes, don't we? So
dogs are not omnivores.
No, not in my books, 100%. That's a very highly opinionated topic, that one, though. I think if you would be interested to hear other people's take on that one.
Yeah, and feel free to leave comments. But, when you were going to ask me, what would you say?
Were you going to say carnivore?
Of course.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
It's crazy. It's to me, as you said, they'll choose 97%. You know, but a complete and balanced diet might be, organ meat, muscle meat, bit of fruit and veg, which, you know, they talk about mirroring the diet of the wild animal, might be the stomach matter of a omnivore or a herbivore that they've eaten. Exactly. So, yeah, they're carnivores. And everyone knows cats are slightly more carnivorous.
Yes.
But dogs are carnivores.
I've actually had a theory lately that we are as well, but we're sort of almost like bacteriovores because we've got so much bacteria in us that actually we're just this walking body for bacteria to do what it likes with us, if you know what I mean. Like, it's actually the bacteria that drive what happens with everything, which is just makes it feel a bit alien-like. I don't know
if I like
that.
Have you seen The End of Us? Is it the one Pedro Pascal zombie TV show?
No, thanks.
That's, you've literally described that. The bacteria takes us over. We all become these crazy fungus heads.
The bacteria's taking us over. Yeah.
But it causes us to just not be ourselves.
That's the next caricature.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Oh my God! I did a chat with about probiotics.
Yeah,
and I feel like have you watched Ant-Man?
No.
Okay. Ant-Man goes down to the quantum realm.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Ant-Man shrinks himself and goes down to the quantum realm. It's this entirely new, different civilization, but microscopic.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like probiotics are like, and I think probiotics are hip and front and center. But I just feel like they're going to explode even more.
It's wild.
I feel like it's going to become this huge, big thing, even bigger than it is now. Because
it's just crazy.
Maybe it's just because the penny's dropped with me. And God.
It's amazing the research. I was reading the other day that they've found the biome of breast cancer, of prostate cancer, and they've all got a different gut biome, and I guess what the chicken and egg is. But just the way we can treat disease these days, understanding the balance of bacteria is it's mind-blowing.
I mean, how your brain works.
Yes.
You know, it's crazy.
It's so interesting. So it's exciting. It's exciting times.
It is. It is. Mm. Okay. We're just busting away here,
I know.
Dr. Nick. What's next?
Oh, yeah. We're still waiting for me. Oh, good.
Excellent segue into what's next.
So what we were talking about is before the omnivore carnivore debate and how dogs have 30,000 years ago joined men. And whether this whole argument about, well, they've been domesticated for so long, we shouldn't feed them what they've eaten for many thousands of years. But when you actually look at the physiology and the DNA, there's not really that much change.
Yeah.
30,000 years is not really that long a time.
When you're talking evolution, it's a blink of an eye.
Yeah, yeah. So we've gone from dogs a natural diet of high meat, that we were talking about, to now this processed diet that we're giving them, which is around 50 to 60% carbohydrates. And very highly processed diet. And now we're saying that that's what they've evolved to, whereas every other species on the planet eats real food. But for some reason, our dogs have evolved as the only, well, dogs and cats, the only species in the entire world that thrives on a 100% processed diet. That's how they've evolved. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Bonkers.
It's absolutely extraordinary. But I was one of them. I did believe it. I really believed it. So let's break it down, though. So to break down carbohydrates, which is the real issue I have with a lot of the processed food, you need an enzyme called amylase. So the argument people have is that they have found some amylase in the saliva, so in your mouth, in some dogs, very varying degrees. So some dogs have salivary amylase. So all of a sudden they've evolved. We're done now. They can die. We're good. They have evolved to digest carbohydrates because this is humans have salivary amylase. True carnivores don't have salivary amylase because they only have amylase in their pancreas, so they can only start digesting carbohydrates once
they've ingested
once it gets down to three gut into pancreas. So because they have a small amount of salivary amylase, all of a sudden we should hit them left, right and centre with truckloads of carbohydrates.
Pasta.
Absolutely.
Rice.
That's going to be. And this just infuriates me because, again, thrive, survive, this keeps coming up in this podcast, doesn't it? Just because some dogs, not even all dogs, have some ability to start digesting carbohydrates as soon as it hits their mouth, some ability, doesn't mean that that should be the primary source of food that we give them. This is not thriving. This is putting a lot of pressure on the organs. So you might start at just the tiniest bit, hello, dental disease, with all those carbs turning into sugar. But then imagine that pressure then we're just putting on those poor pancreas. And for anyone who hasn't listened, I think our organ podcast is
kind of... Yeah, it's
a good one. Oh, I've got such a... The pain point on the pancreas for me with this processed diet, I just could go on and on about it all day. I'm like, the pressure we're putting on this pancreas, and then we just wonder why we have these dogs that are getting diabetes, Cushing's, all these other diseases. It's and chronic pancreatitis. It's just so logical. It's just, this is what defies me. I'm like, it's just so logical that if you give a pet a diet they don't thrive on, you're putting extra pressure on the organs that produce these enzymes, not in enough quantity, and then we're hitting them with too much of this ingredient that needs this enzyme that they're not producing enough of, you're going to get consequences. Like, it's just so logical.
It's a horrible cycle too.
It's common sense though.
I know.
We're wondering why in our processed food fed dogs that they're getting huge levels of diabetes, pancreatitis. It's just like...
It's nuts.
Let's just follow the path of common sense with this. Like, it's really not that difficult.
It beggars belief.
It's extraordinary. It's really extraordinary. But it took me a long time to even come to the conclusion myself. So
I'm pretty comfortable hearing from a vet that dogs haven't evolved to process carbohydrates.
Look,
I'm pretty comfortable hearing that.
I mean, look, they can process carbohydrates. Well, absolutely. Dogs can process carbohydrates, 100%. Cats can a little bit too, but not to the point where we can justify drowning them in carbohydrates as the primary ingredient in their diet.
Yeah.
It is really, really causing consequences to our pets. It's horrendous what this high carbohydrate diet is doing to our pets. So we need to feed them what they thrive on, and our pets thrive on a high protein, high fat, minimal carbohydrate diet. So that is what we should feed them. That is what they thrive on. just because you have the ability to process alcohol and sugar, don't you? It doesn't mean you drown yourself.
I don't thrive on it.
No, no. Doesn't mean we have the ability to process so many things, but it's not all good for us.
There was a documentary in the late 90s by a fella called Morgan Spurlock.
Yeah.
It was called Supersize Me.
Yes,
I won't say the company that he was kind of, front and center in that doco. He survived.
Yeah.
He did not thrive.
No. No.
Where he had to eat food from this place 3 meals a day.
Yeah. But this is what's happening to our pets. They're surviving.
Yeah.
But you can see them walking. Like, I see them walking to my clinic. They've got that bloated, what I call like carb loading appearance. Like, they've just got that sort of thickened appearance.
Yeah.
Like, sorry, I must just spat on you then. I'm just getting a bit carried away with this. That thickened trunk.
Yeah.
Dry skin. Lethargic, they look old, they just look a bit like inflamed. And then I move them to a fresh food diet, they come in, they're glossy, they've dropped that sort of fluid retention, carb loading look, they look alive again. But a lot of people can't see that, so they can't see that their pets aren't thriving.
Yeah.
Because they're surviving, aren't they? Yeah. And we're like, okay, well, my dog survived to 12, it was riddled with arthritis, chronic pancreatitis, anxiety, da-da-da-da-da.
Poor fella.
Lived to that age, and it ate that, so that was fine, wasn't it?
It probably hated life.
Well, it struggled.
Yeah.
It struggled. So, yeah, very big difference here. They do have the ability to digest carbohydrates. They have been with humans for 30,000 years, but it is not the diet that they thrive on. So that is absolutely a myth busted for me.
Myth busted. I love it.
And I will come to loggerheads with anybody challenges me.
I'll have words with any man who says different.
I will.
Love it. And 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
And, don't need any convincing.
You wouldn't dare not. No, I'm not.
No, but I don't need any convincing on that.
No, no.
But once again, common sense.
Yes. Yeah. Right. And science. Common sense and science. This is what it's
Put
all about.
Both of them together, we could rule the world.
Absolutely, we could.
What's next? We got another couple to get through.
So this is an interesting one for me, and I was talking about this on some a few Instagram reels and TikToks and stuff lately, because I think that we've, for some amazing marketing reason, there must be millions of dollars behind some of these companies, we have created this peace of mind that this tiny little biscuit is the fountain of youth to this complete and balanced something. That if you don't feed this obsessively complete and balanced biscuit every day, that something catastrophic is going to happen. But, meanwhile, we don't eat a complete and balanced diet every day. No. What does complete and balanced even mean? And we're so scared, like this obsession of complete and balanced and what this has created, it's made us actually fear feeding real food.
Yeah.
And I probably still to a degree have a bit of PTSD from it. And I probably shouldn't say PTSD because I'm not sort of making mockery. Like I have carried... It's so hard to remove that from your mindset. That's a really, for me, that's the hardest thing to get rid of, the obsession about complete imbalance.
Yeah.
Because that was drilled into my head. And I think this is what is behind this processed food argument, is that the only way you can give your pet all the nutrients they need is by feeding it a complete and balanced processed diet, and that there is no other way to do it. And it has just been drilled into us that it's really hard to get rid of that.
It's madness, though.
It's really hard. And keep in mind that they've tried to create complete and balanced diets for humans and failed every time. You look at even some baby formulas and things like that. No one succeeded to do it. So is it really true in the pet world? Is it really true? And when we say complete and balanced, what we're talking about is there's these nutritional guidelines that, funnily enough, all pet foods have to stand by. So whether you're raw, lightly cooked, kibble, tinned food, freeze-dried, dehydrated, whatever food you make for pets, you have to, if you're going to claim that it's complete and balanced, you have to stick to guidelines. So there's the American guidelines, which are AFCO, And then there's the European guidelines, which are FEDIAF. And basically what they do is they have done a series of tests and they have decided that the minimum and maximum nutrient requirement for all sorts of things, copper, zinc, protein, fat, take your pick. And so they've basically got these charts. So when pet food companies are making their food, they're like, if I add this, and they'll type it in and they'll make sure it's complete and balanced. And that's where they land. This is not a... There is no official body which makes people, pet companies, actually submit their food.
Oh.
It's all voluntary.
Yeah, okay.
So this, and this is how millions of pets have been killed over the years, because someone has accidentally dumped a whole bag of, you know, whatever into it and no one's got it checked, and all of a sudden these pets have got some toxic level of something and died. So it's horrendous. So it is so poorly regulated. It's voluntary, including in Australia.
Yep.
So, but this is where we get this complete imbalance from. It's so voluntary to the point where they've done, some third parties have actually done tests, and there's numerous papers, but one off the top of my head, I remember a UK study tested, and it'd be the same in Australia, a group of kibble that they tested, I think it was around 38%. It was definitely under 40% met the minimum nutrient requirements. That means over 60% of the bags of kibble that they tested
weren't getting there.
Weren't even meeting minimum nutrient requirements.
Oh,
it was even worse for tinned food. I think it was like 6% or 9%. But the problem is they're so highly heat processed. Yeah. You just like, how are you meant to figure it out? Like, they might do a trial and they might go, oh, okay, this time when I did this batch of food and I heated it to 5 million degrees for 5 million hours, I lost, I'm being sarcastic.
I can tell.
I lost, you know, 5,000% of the B vitamins, yeah, I put in. So if I put in 3 kilos, I'll end up with 1 gram of B vitamins at the end. So every time I do it, I'll put 3 kilos in for the rest of the next 10 years and I'll never test it again. Again, I'm being sarcastic here, but you get the picture. It's so hard when you're highly processing food to figure out what it is at the end. So I would argue that the fresh food companies have a much better chance of predicting what their outcome of their food is. Lots of them do test. Lots of them do it voluntarily. But it is, we just need to somehow, and I'm working on it myself, probably somehow get rid of this obsession with this complete imbalance and stop fearing feeding real food to our pets and not think that the processed food is the magic answer to ticking all the nutrient boxes, because when they test it, it's not even completely balanced. No. And this is all our, this is all these like well-loved vet brands. This is not just the cheap supermarket stuff. This is all across the board. So no one is perfect in this. No one is infallible in this sort of this discussion. There is no perfect super premium kind of brand out there that is just the magic answer to everyone.
We actually are complete and balanced.
No, they're all the same. You look at all the recalls and the animals, they're from some of the good brands. Don't worry about that.
So
the good,
whoever, everyone who's listening to this, they're going to have one sort of myth that they go, oh, that's the one that's really sticking with me. This is the one that's sticking with me.
Yeah, yeah. It's the hardest one for me to get rid of. Yeah. I have to say, even like I've been fresh feeding for a long time now, I still probably don't have the confidence to do it myself, because even with recipes, and it's probably a bit different with recipes, I just don't have the confidence that I'll miss out on something, because I just have that drilled into my head. And I've read the science. I know that they're not complete imbalance. I know that our pets survive on anything. You know, it can take years to see, if you give a vitamin B12 deficiency, it can take years to see that come to life. Like giving your pet a nutritional deficiency, you were not going to always see in 2 minutes, 2 weeks, two months.
A while.
Yeah. It does. It can take a really long time to see it. And it can be so subtle. So I think this is why I'm all about rotation. So you don't want to ever, I wouldn't personally recommend that you just feed one protein source. You want to have...
Mix it up a bit.
Mix it up if you can. I know allergies and things can make it tricky for some people, but it's nice to have, I like to have at least 3 different proteins on rotation. You've got a nice spectrum of amino acids there, nice variation in recipes and things like that. No harm throwing some toppers in. Mm. But don't just think tipping your one cup of your complete and balanced kibble into your dog's food or cat's food bowl is ticking all the boxes, because it's really not.
I love that we've delved into that one. And, you know,
it's scary though. I feel like I've made people real. I feel like if you listen to that and that's new to you, that's actually really unsettling.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, any more unsettling than some of the other untruths that we've heard, you know?
I think I'm on the same page as you. I think that's my most unsettling one.
For me, that's the one that's going to stick with me. But also, I mean, let's look at the human sector. Let's look at the breakfast cereals that we've been sold forever as, oh, this is...
Oh, my kids still go around there. I'm don't even touch it. But, Mom, it's 5 stars.
Yeah, look at it. It's got, you know, vitamin B and niacin and all nine and all this in it. But I mean, that's a commercial lie we've been told for the past 70 years or 80 years.
But trying to get rid of that out of your mindset is so hard.
And because you'll go into the supermarket and say, well, I won't have Cocoa Puffs, but I'll go for... whatever it is.
You're not picking anything from that section.
Exactly.
Are you, Johnny?
No, I don't eat it.
Good.
I don't eat it. I literally don't. I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's you know, some of them are bloody delicious.
Oh, and that's why a lot of parents say, oh, they love it. Yeah. I'm like, there's lots of things I love. I love chocolate. It's delicious. I love it. I don't eat it every day.
Yeah, but
if you put it in front of me, I probably would.
Yeah, yeah.
And I might choose it over something that's more healthy. It doesn't mean it's the right thing to give me.
No, exactly right.
Yeah, it's really hard. I think, unfortunately, as a pet parent, you have to become educated. Yeah. You can't just turn... No different to if you have your own human children. You have to learn and understand you are a responsible guardian of this pet, and one of your roles is to be educated in about how to give them their best life. And part of that is understanding nutrition. You don't have to be a nutritionist, but you have to have some sort of understanding. You do. I think you do.
And I say that on this podcast a million times. They don't get to choose. I do. Yeah. I choose to go eat a cheeseburger. I know what I'm doing.
Yes.
Our pets don't. They rely on us. To do the right thing for them.
And I think it's
a responsibility.
And they give us so much. Surely the least we can do is just...
keep them healthy.
I know. Yeah. And I know not everyone can afford to do anything and everything, but they're really simple, easy things that you can do that don't cost a lot.
Exactly.
And you can start simple. It can be as easy as just... putting an egg in their diet.
You know,
you can start really simple. Getting a tin of sardines in spring water. Start simple.
I got sardines at home for Frank.
There you go.
Righto.
Chuck some mushies in.
Complete and balanced.
Yeah.
Meth busted. What's next?
Oh, this is the last one.
I'm looking at this on the page. I'm going, really?
Apparently it's a real thing.
It's a thing.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Apparently it's a thing. We may as well. This is a bit of a random myth. So when I have heard pet parents say this to me. Pet parents are worried, I think it comes from dogs that are aggressive. So if a dog has an aggressive tendency,
right,
they're worried if they feed it meat, it's going to become more aggressive. Have you not heard this?
I haven't heard it.
Okay. This just sounds really random.
Let's get into it. I'm psyched.
So it's like the vampire thing. Maybe it's coming back. They just say like it's meant to, it might make them bloodthirsty. Like they're going to hunt and I don't know if they eat a steak, maybe they're going to go and eat your leg or something. I don't know. Like it's that kind of hunting. It's going to bring out a hunting instinct.
Right.
Or if it maybe with a cat, it might go and kill more wildlife or that kind of.
Make them kill less.
I know. So it's if anyone's listening to this, just rolling their eyes, wondering what we're talking about. It's a thing. Some people do believe it. So if you've never heard it, don't worry.
So basically, the ideology or the idea that we're looking to bust here is that raw meat diets can make your pet more aggressive, or bloodthirsty.
Yeah, it's a myth. So your pets with aggressive behaviour or hunting instincts or anything like that, it's just primal behaviour. Like it is, it's within them. It's genetic. Yeah. It's part of their genetic makeup. As I said much earlier with the cats, those indoor cats that are out hunting with that sort of prey behaviour, it's just normal for them. That's what cats do. It's what your dog is. Your dog. You can't change them. So please don't not feed your dog fresh food because they're going to become bloodthirsty and attack your leg.
After working at Big Dog, and then throughout my raw feeding journey that I've been on, which sounds so wanky.
My raw feeding journey. How long is your raw feeding journey?
2015.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But in saying that,
You're very where's your confidence at compared to, like, if you think back what you were like at 2015?
What do you mean confidence?
Like in raw feeding, like where we, how did you start? What was your first thing you did?
It was Chris Essex.
Yeah. Did you take the plunge? Did you just go straight in?
Oh, yeah.
Did you start?
Because it was explained to me and I sat there and I'm like, I'm an idiot. I literally felt like an idiot.
Really?
I was like, of course. And it was immediate. I was like,
yeah.
Yeah, well, okay, now that someone said that to me,
yes,
it makes complete sense. And then I just went about my business.
That's really good.
But I feel like an idiot, you know, nine times a day. So it's not I wasn't embarrassed about it.
No.
You know.
You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, I was like, okay, that's exactly right. I'm completely confident with that information.
Good.
I processed it myself and said, that is absolutely correct.
Yeah, let's move forward.
Let's go.
Information's power.
It is, absolutely. But one thing I came up with, and this is probably by no means anything that is accurate, but it was my thought. I thought to myself, well, wouldn't it actually satisfy their urge to hunt if they are eating this, you know, raw diet of meat and bone and offal and things like that? Wouldn't that actually suppress any sort of behavioural issues and any sort of urge to hunt, because that's the end result of their hunt? Getting that. So that was my theory. I thought, well, that makes sense that maybe they would calm down a little bit.
Well, I don't know. I think that eating the real raw meat balances their gut bacteria, so they've got a better gut brain axis anyway. So they're calmer.
Yeah.
They're more. I think that, speaking of 30,000 years of our dogs evolving with us, I think the genetic selection, I do see behaviour changes in breeds. So I think that is, and you can see that change generation to generation. That's quite a quick change. So if we're breeding calm, non-hunting dogs together, we've probably bred away a lot of times from that kind of behaviour anyway. So the dogs that we saw 30,000 years ago are not the same. They're not going to be hunting companions.
Yeah.
You know, my griffins are not. They're going to be rubbish at hunting. So I guess it depends on the breed. Maybe some of the more, I guess, those more ancient breeds, maybe.
Dogs, you know?
Yeah, but I just don't. There's definitely no link to it all. I think, if anything, it would definitely calm. It's going to calm the gut-brain axis because it's more normal for them. So I have no doubt that they will have a less anxious disposition because they're going to have a more natural gut balance, and that's so closely linked with your behaviour.
Let me tell you this. If I'm getting fed carbs all day, every day, I'm angry.
Yeah, you would be.
I'm ticked off.
Because your glucose is just spiking all the time, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it's funny, you know, I've been on a flight recently, so I got a little bit of jet lag. I was just in the supermarket, and all I could look at was a steak. I'm like, my God, I want a steak so bad.
Your body was telling you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You listen.
Yeah, and it's funny. I walked in and I'm like, I need salad and I need a steak.
Yeah,
it's
good.
Exactly what my body was telling me.
Yeah.
So you got to listen to it.
It does. Not listen to it when it says you want sugar.
or booze. so, yeah, I mean, as I said, I hadn't heard that at all.
That
but I'm more than happy to say, hey, we've busted that, because that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's a bust.
Yeah.
So what do we call it? Raw meat diets make dogs aggressive or bloodthirsty.
Yeah.
It's busted.
We love there it. We All right. We're good. We're good.
Look, I think we've busted some really important, but some of them, you know, some of them I wasn't totally aware of, but some of them are, you know, what we probably just thought were truths in our life.
Yeah.
So it's great to have someone with your qualifications and your experience to actually sit here and go, no, that's actually wrong. This is how it should be, and this is okay.
I hope it helps. And I think having a discussion about it helps you. If you can understand where the controversies come from, then that, I think, helps you understand and change your own mind yourself, doesn't it? Like, if someone just tells you an answer to something, you're like, oh, I'm not sure if I'm going to walk away with that. But if you can actually get some science behind it, or understand where it's all come from, then I think you're happy to move forward with it and change your own mindset.
Look, ultimately, information like this, it's why a podcast like this is so good and so powerful, is because no matter what you're talking about, if you're told the story, it's more likely to resonate with you rather than just go, here's a bunch of numbers, here's a bunch of facts and figures.
Yeah.
When it's told as a story, it makes so much more sense, and it's so much more easier to digest that information for it to sort of settle into your brain and go, that actually makes sense, because I can see how this story evolves and how it works to a better outcome.
I agree. I don't think I need to give you 12 papers on every single myth. I don't think it's going to change the outcome. So. No.
Excellent. Yeah. Oh, this is great. I'm glad we finally got to do this.
It's so fun. It's brilliant. So fun.
Absolutely. Nick, how does someone find you on the internet machine these days?
The internet. Well, we can find, I'm on all socials all the time. So I'm on TikTok, drnicolerouse.vet. I'm on Instagram, Dr. Nicole Rouse, and I'm on Facebook, Dr. Nicole Rouse. And then I'm also with my two businesses as well. So the clinic, Monte Albert Vet, and Shy Tiger is there under Facebook and Instagram as well. But Shy Tiger is Shy Tiger Health as the handle. And then, my clinic's in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne.
So if you're in that area, drop in and say hello.
Yeah.
Nick, it's been awesome. Always is.
So
good to do it in person as well. Makes a big difference.
Brilliant, brilliant. Thanks, Johnny.
That was Dr. Nicole Vet, Nicole Rouse, sorry, as you just heard, the owner of Mont Albert Vet Surgery in eastern Melbourne, founder and owner of Shy Tiger Health Products for Animals. Thank you so much for coming by. You can hit her on the socials that Dr. Nick was just talking about. Ask her questions. If you have any questions about the podcast we've just done, email the guys at Big Dog, customercare@bigdogpetfoods.com.au. If you call them, feel free to do so. You might hear a familiar voice as the voice that tells you which option to take when you call.
You've made it, John.
I absolutely have. That's been amazing. Look, we'll catch you next time. Give your dog a scratch and a pet from us, but this is us signing out. Thanks, Dr. Nick.
Good night.
Hey, thanks for listening to our podcast. For more information and content, visit the Big Dog Pet Foods website. Please note that the information discussed in these podcasts is general in nature and has been provided in good faith for educational and informational purposes only. The information provided is not, nor is it intended to be, a substitute for professional advice or care. If any of the topics discussed raise questions or concerns for you regarding the health of your pet, we recommend that you consult your veterinarian or trusted pet health provider for an individual assessment and advice. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.